A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello there, welcome to this week's Arscast. This is version 2. I'm back in Dublin, I'm back in front of my computer, I've got a better microphone, I've got a better computer and better tools at my disposal to hopefully clean up the audio a little bit from the live event we did in the garage in Highbury in Islington on Thursday night. Myself and James were joined by Amy Lawrence, Philippe Auclair and Stuart McFarlane, the club photographer. A load of great people came out to see the show and it was fantastic. We all had a great night and good chats and a couple of beers together, and it was all in all great fun. But it has to be said, the sound guy had a bit of a mare. Unfortunately, as I explained in the first little intro I did on Thursday, the first few minutes of the podcast were not recorded. So we missed the introductions, and we missed a great story from Amy, who overheard people on the way in talking about the podcast. She said, well, it's good, but it's just not as funny as it used to be, which raised a lot of laughs, and that's referenced throughout the podcast. So what I've done is I've managed to clean up the audio a little bit, take some of the hiss out of it, make the people talking sound a bit more there, if you get me. What it has done, though, is sort of take out a bit of the background noise, so the audience doesn't sound quite as present as they were. And obviously when you hear the audience laughing, they were laughing much louder than it sounds on this. And I'm not just saying that. They really were. The audience were really into it. But to sort of balance this sound problem that we had, this is the thing. So, look, we're going to get on with the podcast. We pick it up when the sound guy remembers that he had to put the fader up to start the recording. And James is talking just a little bit about the Champions League game on Wednesday night.
Game for 7 years, according to Opta, where there were more goals than shots on target. True.
Really?
Yeah.
That's bananas.
I know.
That's a kind of West Brom-like statistic.
I know. But that has been the way of it, hasn't it, in the last few weeks? I mean, last night, though, I felt... Why was last night worse than the Man U game? I mean, why did it bother you more, Andrew, do you think? Why do you think it was more?
Because scoring late at Old Trafford playing shit is really great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. I think the United game, you know, Jose Mourinho said afterwards that he had a draw that felt like a defeat, which is brilliant, and we were all delighted by that. But last night for Arsenal was exactly that. It was a draw which felt like a defeat because of the ramifications, I guess, in terms of the Champions League group, what it does.
I think it's easy to be pretty negative, which some people out there in sort of social media land have been after the last few results. But if you step back for a second, I think one thing that is positive is that in all three games, maybe in the last couple of years, they could have ended in defeats, and none of them did. And I think that's notable, particularly as it's November, you know, to be still unbeaten with a bit of November to go. It is a better than normal, so you have to give it a little bit of positive spin.
Sure, no? Philip, you have a theory, Philippe, about November, isn't that right?
Well, it's actually a serious theory.
Okay, I wasn't making light of it.
No, you wouldn't do that,
Can you make it funny, Philippe? Because apparently the podcast's really gone downhill.
No, it can be by chance that every year we have this dip at this time of the season. And Arsenal is not the only club, by the way, to experience that. The neighbours up north have got the same problem. And I think a lot of it comes to the pre-season conditioning. Because what you try and do is, normally you should condition your players so they hit the peak more towards the end of the season. When you ask too much from them during the pre-season, what you have is a team that is very fit at the beginning, then has this dip, which is generally around November, early December. And the fact it's happened so many seasons on the trot makes me think that, as many players have said, the pre-season training program is perhaps a little bit too harsh on the bodies of the players, and that you suffer from that. And I have to say that when I was been watching all the games, I was at all the games actually in November, I felt players who physically were not quite at where they should be at this stage of the season. Apart from Alexis Sanchez, who's got, I don't know, a special deal with God, to quote Kate Bush. Not the same, obviously. But he seems to be impervious to these kind of things. But the others, you look at Özil, Alex Iwobi, also has a problem. And you look, I mean, at Theo Walcott, we'll probably talk more about Theo in a minute, but...
Oh, great.
Okay, maybe not. But it seems an awful lot of them have got physical problems at the moment, which is, you shouldn't have in November. No way. And if you compare with the teams which are doing very well at the moment, namely the guys down south in blue, the contrast is absolutely phenomenal.
Would that have something to do with the fact that they're not playing any midweek football?
It will have to do with that. It will also have to do with the fact that when you don't play midweek football, it means the manager has got time to prepare tactically for the next game. Which is one thing which is often forgotten about is that when you're playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday or Sunday, you don't have time to genuinely prepare your team. It's all about recuperation. And so it's a great luxury for Klopp and for Conte to have this time, not only for rest, but also for preparation for the next game. Arsenal doesn't have this luxury.
But Stuart, I mean, how do you view things from your pretty unique position? Close to the pitch or up in the stands taking these pictures? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I was with Ray Parlour today, and he was talking about even 15 years ago we had a lull in November. It's not a new thing. Mm. And the training regime it's not as physically demanding pre-season, but it just seems to be something that we've had for even since 2001. So I don't really understand the reasons for it.
Right. Well, someone needs to have
there
a word.
Goes my theory.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Sorry. Isn't Conte's pre-season training ridiculous as well?
Pretty ridiculous, yes. Yeah. Not as ridiculous as Pochettino's.
Right.
Which is absolutely insane. But you know,
like what? I mean, does he make them
walk over
fire?
Well, the thing is that because he... he insists he's one of those double session kind of guys, which, you know, is not the case at Arsenal. Certainly not as a rule, but... the fact that you have a physical dip always at the same moment in the year makes you think that there is a slight problem somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's a hypothesis rather than a theory.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
It's not just the physical dip in the players out on the pitch, though. It's also that injuries come like at the same point year on year on year. And how much do you think that the way we've played in the last few games is to do with the particular absentees? So you look at... I mean, Santi Cazorla and Hector Bellerin are a really big two in that respect, aren't they? I think we clearly really miss them.
I just think, I remember speaking to one of the players a little while ago from the old days, talking about Ray just now, and them talking about when Arsene first arrived and the sessions being quite light compared to what they were used to under George and that kind of toughness of regime. And the whole atmosphere around the place changed and players didn't feel that fit. And Arsene just kept saying to them, just trust me now, you know, it's all right, because the time when you need to be fit, feeling like you're on fire at the end of the season, you will be flying. And, there's almost a sense that it's incredibly difficult to have this high-intensity physical level from right at the start of the season to right at the end without a dip somewhere along the line. Now, Leicester came pretty close last year to not dipping, but that's very much the exception rather than the rule. And as you touched on with the lack of European football, it can make a big difference. But I think being regularly in the Champions League, as Arsenal are, it's maintaining all the interest in all the competitions, juggling the squad, dealing with the injuries, and knowing, I think deep down Arsene knows there will be a period which you've just got to kind of get through.
So is this something we should nearly be a little bit more upbeat about, because there's a more resilience to the team perhaps this season, that these three fixtures, which are difficult against top quality opposition, we probably would have fallen on our face a bit in previous years.
I think
we can be encouraged by that.
I think so, because every team will go through these kind of phases, and what you've got to be able to do is to manage the weak moments in your season. If you do that, there's every chance that you're going to be very high up at the end of the season, because you will have managed to do that. And if you look at the champions of the past few years, it's always been the case. There's a moment when you've got four, five, six games where you're not quite together, but if you get a point here, a point there, 3 points here, you'll be doing all right. You'll get back, which is what, Tottenham have been doing, because they're going through exactly the same problem at the moment. Arsenal are still unbeaten is what, now 18 games, which is pretty remarkable series. And so you would imagine that as well when Cazorla comes back, But also when Danny Welbeck comes back, who offers an awful lot, you will see a team that perhaps reminds us of what it was like just about a month ago. How much our discourse has changed, hasn't it? Because it was the all singing, all dancing Arsenal was back.
Yeah,
a few weeks ago.
Someone told me yesterday this is the second longest unbeaten run since Invincibles, which I could not believe that.
Yeah.
At all.
Well, look, I mean, that's I think preserving that is a really important thing for this team, even if they're a bit mentally fragile at times. You know, doing what they did at Old Trafford to dig out a late point and going unbeaten in these games, I think it can only instill them with confidence. You know, maybe they're maybe not as self-analytical as we are. You know, when we look at things and we're analyzing it, they just look, well, we haven't been beaten and we're tough to beat now, even when we're not playing particularly well.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think one thing that people would point the finger at Arsenal teams of late is this sort of vulnerability mentally, the feeling that there's a fragility that's around the corner. And you know, not being unbeaten is an answer to that of sorts. But I think, as you say, Philippe, a month or so ago where people are saying the old Arsenal are back, this is reminiscent of the great Arsenal teams. It's only set against that bar that people are whinging at the minute, I would say. But that's where personnel choices become interesting, because obviously when, you know, if you take that win against Chelsea as probably the best performance of the season, and you had this connection going on between Alexis Sanchez and Ozil, both playing high up the pitch, almost like a 4-4-2 classic Invincible Stars with Bergkamp or Henry, and the wide players pushing up. And it felt reminiscent of that. But that has faded in the last few weeks. So it's a question of how quickly, if at all, Arsene Wenger can get himself back or get the team back to where they were, those kind of levels.
Right. So, I mean, just going back to PSG and where it leaves us in terms of the Champions League, James, it could be another second place finish. But when you look at some of the other groups, maybe second place is not as dangerous as it might have been in other years.
You know, we could get those minnows Barcelona or Atletico or Juventus or one of those. No, I mean, look, we'll avoid Bayern Munich if we finish second, which they've been our scourge in the past. But there are plenty of other good teams. I mean, you're kind of at the mercy of the draw to an extent. And I think that
it's going to be Barcelona.
Yeah.
You can all book your flights now.
We can cut to the chase, flights. I guess. It probably will be Barcelona. I mean, look, the thing is, we've been knocked out at the first knockout stage. I think it's 6 years in a row. And I think in five of those 6 years, we finished second in the group. I don't feel that that's coincidence. You know, I mean, even if you're looking at the scale of the club, the size of the club, if they've won the group, they're doing something right. You don't want to be drawn against them. Mm. So I was really optimistic after the draw in Paris that we could go on and top the group. To not do so now, it is frustrating. It is frustrating, but we've just got to hope for the best, I guess.
Which means getting the winner of Group B.
Yeah.
Which is Napoli, Benfica, Besiktas. Basically, one of those three.
Right. Well, I mean,
it's like a 1-in-6 shot or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, do you feel, Philippe, it's important for this team to progress beyond the round of 16 this season? I mean, is it becoming a millstone?
Yeah, it's becoming a bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah,
I know. Yes, it is important because I think as well that the way the season started, you thought there aren't too many injuries. The team is playing well. The results are coming. There's the undefeated run. The group didn't look particularly difficult. PSG are going through a transition phase, which is quite difficult for them after Laurent Blanc going, Zlatan going, which was a big one, Unai Emery taking quite a while to settle in and being the butt of a lot of criticism back in France. You think, well, this is actually a good time and a perfect occasion to do that. I mean, I personally still think that this squad is probably the most complete, the most versatile that we've had, well, since 2003, 2004.
I also think amidst this kind of lamenting of finishing second in the group and it's all very friendly, I mean, I might be missing something here, but I think there's a team from North London that just didn't get anywhere at all.
It is going to be really fun watching Spurs trying to fill Wembley on for Europa League game.
You know that apparently they're thinking of moving the game back to White Hart Lane.
I think they are, but I think Pochettino said today he expects it to be Wembley, so that'll be a spectacle to behold. Honestly, I might go just to watch. That's one seat sold.
I mean, Well, it won't be sold. You'll be in the press box, I think.
True.
Will there be fewer people than for the Johnston Paints Trophy or something like that? Or
maybe. I mean, they could set a record.
The lowest of ever attendance at Wembley. At Wembley.
Spurs will win something this year.
Hey. Just one thing I did want to mention, and I know it's probably a difficult thing to say, and it's a strange time, but I think we should stop really and very seriously take a moment to thank Edinson Cavani for being absolutely rubbish at finishing.
Yeah,
he is it's quite extraordinary. I mean, how this man manages to score 20-25 goals a season is beyond me. I mean, have you seen...
Philippe, you know better than us. What is happening in Liga? What's going on? Are they just giving him the ball in front of goal 100 times a game?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was a Champions League game. I have no idea. I mean, in Liga, you know, you've got one great team, Monaco.
Yeah.
Great results, haven't they had in the Champions League? Nice is very good to watch, too. PSG is a very fine team. There's absolutely no problem with that. But Cavani is... I was talking to some PSG supporters before the game. I mean, the ones who don't want to kill me because I write a lot about PSG and not things that they like very much. But they told me, just wait for Cavani. He's bound to miss two or three chances. And they were right. I mean, the 1v1
like
against
Spina. It's happened before.
Absolutely. It happens every game, apparently.
Yeah.
I think
do the players
and
like,
they play 53 million like for him.
Do the players, did the PSG players like Cavani? It just seemed to be, for me, for where I sat, missed a couple of chances, and the players, it seemed to, the body language didn't look great between the players.
I couldn't possibly comment apart from saying that you're completely right.
There we go then.
No, you're right.
No, it's some compilation in the two games.
It's fantastic.
Majestic, so thank you very much, Edinson Cavani. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate it. It's great.
Yeah.
53 million.
That's how many chances he's missed.
Ka-ching.
That was an own goal right there. Or an open goal, I mean.
No, that was an assist.
And they said it wasn't as funny as it used to be.
I know.
Come here, Amy. What's going on with Granit Xhaka? No, I don't mean to put you on the spot or anything, but...
It's bonkers, isn't it? I wish I had some special insight, but I'm just as confused as everybody else. And I think it's bizarre. I actually took the trouble today to look at the statistics of how often Emmanuel Petit and Robert Pires played at the start of their Arsenal careers, because it's quite an easy comparison to make. There's a sentiment, a memory of them taking a while to bed in, taking a few months to find their feet and become the great players that they would come at Arsenal. But when I look back at the stats, what was quite surprising to me is how often they both played, right from the beginning of being signed. Emmanuel Petit started the first game of the season and was virtually not out the side. He had a couple where he started and was subbed early on, but other than that, he played 90 minutes virtually every game. Robert Pires had the rather famous story of sitting on the bench at Sunderland for his first ever game, thinking, where am I? What am I doing here? And can I please get the hell out of here? As he watched Sunderland trying to kick lumps out of Arsenal in a pretty dour 0-0 draw that was shy of genuine kind of chances to show quality. But he also played a lot of football from the start. Now, it did take them both that period of time to really flourish. But the strange thing for Xhaka is he's not really getting the game time. And for a guy who... the only more expensive players than him, really, recently, if ever, are the star attacking players in Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So I guess we just have to wait and hope. I mean, I think it must be quite hard for him, because coming from a club where he was the captain, he was the mainstay, he played all the time, and obviously feeling this was an upward move for him personally, excited, he's a... by all accounts, a smashing guy, very upbeat, very happy, came very motivated. I imagine he's a little bit bewildered to be not getting much of a chance. So it's going to be a challenge. And if he, like all these things, if he comes out the other side, he'll be the stronger for it. But I can't imagine it's easy.
Mm. Any theories, Philippe, on why he's being left out of the side? I was very surprised
I'm like you, like everybody else. We're all scratching our heads and wondering what on earth is going wrong, because Also, when he's been called upon, he hasn't been bad at all. Actually, he's been pretty damn good. And he offers things that other players don't offer. He certainly is a better distributor of the ball than Coquelin, for example. He's got a wonderful shot on him. He's tough, sometimes a little bit hot-blooded, but who cares? I don't quite understand. I genuinely, we're all like us. I think there is no single reason that you can point at. Has he been injured? No. Has he been rubbish? No. Has he been suspended? Not yet. This will happen, though, because I think last season
he got a red card.
Yes, well, okay. He got 12 yellows and one red. Yeah, 12 yellows and one red last season or something like that. So it's too extraordinary.
Do you think he gave Arsene Wenger a Phil Collins compilation for his birthday or something?
It's the only possible explanation.
Yeah, you've got your ear to the ground, Stuart. What's gone on with Granit on the training ground? What's he done?
Ask Amy.
It is weird. I wondered if the writing... No, writing's on the wall is a very strong way to put it. I wonder if it spelled trouble when I saw Arsene describing him, saying that he considers him more a box-to-box player. I wondered if that was an issue, because it kind of means that rather than being direct competition for Coquelin, say, as the kind of deepest line midfielder, he's against the likes of Ramsey and Cazorla, who we know Arsene thinks an awful lot of. It is just strange, though, to spend that much money on a player. You know, Arsene Wenger doesn't do that. He doesn't go out and spend £35 million, even if there are season ticket renewals to be done at that time of year. it is a suspicious thing, and I don't think there's anything particularly murky underlying it, but as soon as the team came out last night, I thought, well, the chat's going to be about Xhaka, because Coquelin and Ramsey as a midfield pairing is something that's been tried before. I think we saw it maybe even on the opening day of the Premier League season, and it hasn't ever really worked for me.
Mm, same.
So, I don't know. I think when you haven't got Cazorla in there, I think Xhaka's your best distributor in midfield. I think he's the guy. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Mesut Ozil going off the ball, off the boil, rather, in the last few games, but I think he hasn't been on the ball. I think he hasn't got the supply line, which Cazorla's so good at, finding him early.
Yeah. And then, of course, instead of Granit Xhaka, he played Aaron Ramsey, who's becoming something of a lightning rod for frustration for this team and for the way it's playing. A little unfairly, I think
very unfairly.
You know, he's a guy who's been played out of position. Yep. I think we need to see him get a run of games in the centre of midfield.
That would mean rotating the squad perhaps more than has been the case, because in his best position, he can be an absolutely terrific player. He's one of the few midfielders that Arsenal have who actually does runs in the box. He's a goal scorer. I don't know. I'd like to see him perhaps. You know, why not try him at number 10 from time to time? What's wrong with that?
That's what you said, James, earlier on.
Well, I think he is really a number 10. I think that's his best position. I think he's an attacking midfield player who needs to be given that license. And Wales do that really well. They afford him that. Yep. But you can't do that if you've got Mesut Ozil in the side, I would suggest. So it's.
But you've got a right to rest Mesut from time to time. You know that it happens. Other managers.
Not under Arsene Wenger.
No, exactly. And you've got the right to rest Alexis. But I think perhaps, you know, I'm jumping perhaps the gun here, but the main problem for me at the moment is a complete lack of width. There's absolutely no width whatsoever in the team. And you've got people on the wings. I daren't call them the wings because they tend to go back inside. And you've got poor Olivier Giroud, for example, who is waiting for any kind of service, never gets it.
Yeah.
You know, that's, it's not. It's terrible. We sound very downbeat. Come
we do
on,
a bit,
guys.
But I mean, I think
in
a lot of
last
our issues.
16.
Yeah. We'll cheer it up. Okay. But I mean, I just think that the midfield problem is fundamental to the way that the team is playing. I think unless you have a really functioning central midfield, then it's very difficult for the rest of the parts to come together or to connect those parts. So you want the midfield obviously to connect to the wide players and the forwards, and it just doesn't seem as if Arsene Wenger knows quite what his best combination is in there. So we're playing Bournemouth on Sunday. What could be a better time than to try a Xhaka Ramsey central midfield?
Yeah, I'm all for it. Yeah. I'm all for it because I think as you say, that connectivity is the problem. Mustafi last night, he gave the ball away plenty or played it out of touch. And I think it's because he hasn't got that option of somebody who wants to come and pick it up from him. So if you put a Xhaka in there, he's someone who's very happy to drop deep and do that. Gives you a greater chance of finding Ozil, Iwobi in advanced positions if Iwobi plays, which he probably shouldn't. So, yeah, I think, look, Aaron Ramsey played his best football for Arsenal 2013-14 alongside Mikel Arteta. Xhaka's the closest allegory I think we've got to Arteta. So I think it's definitely worth a go. It's definitely worth a go. And that's not to slight Francis Coquelin.
And it's missing out as well, because one thing which I really love about both Koscielny and Mustafi, they're great at bringing the ball forward. Mm. What you need is a midfielder who is tactically intelligent enough to drop back in the center half position. And then you create, which is a bit what I'm afraid to say, City do with Otamendi and John Stones. And it creates a lot of problems for the opposition. There doesn't seem to be this tactical intelligence in Coquelin, or maybe not the instructions, or whoever is in front of the back four. And so, yes, Xhaka, Ramsey, but Bournemouth, not an easy one, I have to say. I'm a little bit uneasy about this one.
Yeah?
Yeah, I am. I do rate them very highly.
I mean, they're a good team.
Very good side, very well organized.
Perhaps the fact that they'll come and try and play football, because I think that's Eddie Howe's philosophy, isn't it? Will suit us a little bit better.
Maybe, but I mean, I think they, even though they try and play football, Eddie Howe will have watched some videos and will be well aware that if you try and deny space and frustrate Arsenal in home matches, that they can quite easily run down a few cul-de-sacs. I don't think he's going to just ignore that.
So, I mean, Bournemouth, and then I think the next game, we've obviously got Southampton in the EFL Cup. We've West Ham away, Stoke at home, a couple of difficult games in December, Everton away and City away. But the next three games are ones that you really want us to see us take 9 points from and sort of get things going again, James.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, Amy's right. It does seem a bit unduly negative. But I think it's that thing of, I think a draw in any situation is always kind of the most frustrating result as a fan, because you don't get the satisfaction of venting that you do with a defeat. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult to derive that much like excitement from any draw. If you win a game, euphoria, brilliant. If you lose, you can shout about Aaron Ramsey, great. But if you draw, it's kind of like there's something left sort of unfulfilled, which I think explains.
You say that, but I remember Glenn Hoddle probably having the biggest orgasm of his life when the the equalised in the
what do you know that we don't, Philippe?
When he left Spurs.
Well, that was one. I was yards away. It was pretty impressive. and they celebrated like they'd won, you know, every single trophy. And did you remember this one? The 2-2?
Yes,
which still give us the title.
Yeah. Tarico, the fullback, pulled his hamstring celebrating us winning the league, didn't he? Quite amazing. Well done.
Yeah, that was your career. Yeah, the guy telling Henri, and Henri's going, you just watch. Wait till
guess
the end
what?
Of the game.
Guess what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. God, they sure can pick him. While I'm trying to rid myself of the image of Glenn Hoddle's orgasm, how do you view these three games, Amy? Like, really important for this team to start winning again, and maybe just... It's not that the momentum has been shifted, it's just that we maybe need to pick up the pace a little.
I think the EFL Cup game is obviously least important and will probably be Arsene's lowest priority.
Even though it's Claude Puel, and there's this really, I mean, this relationship
it's
between the two.
League
yeah,
Cup.
I know. Okay.
But
I guess you just need a jammy win. It doesn't really matter how it comes. I think you know, if things are a bit off kilter, the first thing you try and do is stabilise and not get beat, which obviously they're not getting beat at the moment. The second thing you try and do is just get some wins, and then the next thing you do after that is add the quality. It's like stepping stones, and usually you're having this conversation after defeat, so I keep coming back to this,
yeah.
But you know, many's a time that we've gone to a press conference and Arsene Wenger's under pressure because they've lost a big game and everybody's asking the same old questions, and this time they've had some draws in difficult games against hard opponents, and I think, you know, I don't expect the Bournemouth game to be fantastic. I think it could be quite a hard watch, but if there's 3 points at the end of it, job done. Thank you very much. And then it's just a case of trying to build on from there and try and bring back a bit of that pizzazz, a bit of that confidence and energy that the players had. They were just doing everything quicker earlier on in the season. Mm. Felt watching the game yesterday in Old Trafford that the kind of the speed volume had just been cranked abominably down. And it's a hard thing to suddenly get that click back into a faster rhythm again.
Once they do...
I think that the quality of passing and the quality of the goal scoring and creating of chances returns.
There was one moment yesterday when Kieran Gibbs had a throw-in next to the corner flag, so in the PSG half, and he literally stood there for about 10 seconds waiting for anybody to want the ball.
I was shouting
probably,
for
you
it
probably
at one point.
Have Woo! Yeah, go on. And he was, yes, absolutely, do something. I also remember another moment when Aaron Ramsey was gesticulating at Carl Jenkins and said, go forward. I want to pass the ball forward, please. That's not very good, is it?
No.
No. But it's not my fault.
I don't know. I mean, all this negative talk, you know, of yours.
Andrew, I've got all I want out of these games is I've got a great picture of Arsene Wenger smiling, holding a rugby ball. So after we beat Stoke, it's going everywhere on social media. It's all I care about.
When is it that the Orcs are coming then? So after West Ham, yeah.
Yeah, but we've still got two games left in November to make this the un-Novemberiest November.
Okay.
And go through it hopefully unbeaten, hopefully with some wins under our belt. So Bournemouth on Sunday and then Southampton in the EFL Cup, which has been quite entertaining. I've quite enjoyed the EFL Cup, looking at some of the young players we've got coming through, which brings me very nicely to a young player. We had some good news during the week. Hector, brand new contract. Yeah, everyone loves Hector, don't they? I mean, how can you not love that guy?
Especially just, Barcelona.
Yeah, they can fuck off.
And Man City.
That's another assist.
Yeah, thank you. But, I mean, fantastic news. And like, to see a player develop so quickly and become so important is fantastic. It's, you know, it's not usually a defender who does that either.
Yeah, but he's no ordinary defender.
No.
But
that could be like his slogan, couldn't it?
I think we talked the first time we...
Hector, no ordinary defender.
Yeah.
Saw him was in the League Cup game, and I think we both thought exactly the same thing about him. He's special.
Special, yeah.
He looks like Ronnie Cray.
He's the real special one.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks like one of the Cray twins to me.
Yeah, that's right.
Just like...
Triplets, yeah. The lost Grey brother.
Petrified of him.
There is a serious issue, which is that it sends out a blooming great signal to people who think that they can come and snatch whoever they want. Mm. And I think it would have been not that surprising if his head was turned enough by someone who was going to put a lot of money in front of him. And for him to show that commitment is a big deal for the club, which is... You know, Probably why they've done quite a lot of publicity about it, because they're trying to show, look, we're not here for you to come and rip us off of our talent when we develop it.
Yeah, and it's just fantastic to see this guy develop into one of the best fullbacks in Europe in such a very short space of time. If you remember, I don't think it was his full debut was away at Dortmund, and that was a difficult night for him, but it was a difficult night for everybody. And I think some players, if they go through an experience like that, you think maybe of Callum Chambers, who had that really difficult game at Swansea and never seemed to quite recover from it. This was like water off a duck's back for Hector. He just, well, that's that, and just progress and keeps progressing. He's brilliant to watch.
Yeah, he is. And I mean, it's a lot of money, but they're talking about 100 grand a week, aren't they? Possibly, but
sure.
6.5 years as well. You don't often see that. Mm. But yeah, absolutely worth it. And I think the club are making a lot of noise about it. And I think it does send an important message to the fans, but it also sends an important message to other members of the squad. There are other contract renewals going on, you know, they're incredibly important. So showing that we've got that strength to be able to keep our best players, hopefully that message emanates throughout the squad. We all know who I'm talking about, I guess.
Gabriel.
Yeah. Get that deal done for Gabriel, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're two pressing issues as well, aren't they? Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. How confident should we be? Mesut's bought a new house, hasn't he, in Highgate somewhere? So chances are he's putting down some roots for a couple of years.
I mean, I think the thing about Mesut Ozil, if you watch him and you look at his body language, he just looks like a different human being to the guy who turned up a few years ago, kind of kicked out of Real Madrid when maybe he wasn't expecting it. Took him a little while to get his head around that, which is understandable, actually. And has really evolved as, not particularly as a footballer, but in terms of his own maturity. I mean, he has evolved as a footballer in that he's much more muscular now, much more powerful now. This season, at the beginning of the season, the forward runs and the you know, the goals has been a superb addition, something that Arsene Wenger has been trying to encourage out of him for a while. So he is a sort of different player, but more than that, I think he's a kind of different bloke. and he seems to be very happy here. And a happy Meza has got to be a good thing. And I think that means the signs are quite encouraging as regards a contract renewal. I think that I'd kind of half expect that one to get over the line. The Alexis Sanchez one, I think, is a bit more of a muddy water, and I don't know which way that's going to go.
Complicated by the player or people around him, or is he just that? Is he just that kind of a guy who will say, "Look, I'll do X amount of time here, X amount of time here, and I'm happy to move on"?
I mean, I don't think he's got his roots and enjoy, you know, in the set. He's so much more just about the football. Mm. You know, from what I hear, he turns up he runs into the training ground, you know, sprints around nonstop, does.
Press-ups.
You know, does press-ups while someone's doing a team talk. You know, gets up, does a few more laps.
That's
around
true.
The pitch.
That is true. I've seen it.
you know, and runs off when he's finished. You know, I mean, it is extraordinary. I honestly, when I watch him,
then he gets home, plays a bit of football with the dogs, yeah. Run around the garden, okay. Throws something for the dogs to fetch. Press-ups.
Aren't the dogs trying to
he goes to his piano lesson afterwards, doesn't he?
Bit of light relief.
Absolutely.
Phil Collins, I think.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Sorry.
Lowering the tone, Amy.
but I just, I think he's so much more. He just wants to come in and play, and that's it. So I think the kind of bigger picture is slightly different compared to Mesut Ozil. And I in a lot of these cases, you're a bit at the mercy of the agent as well. And if the agent wants to move you on, then it can just become more difficult all round.
But you'd have to think which kind of club Alexis would go to and in which he would have the same status, which is basically he's in the starting lineup, he's an absolute hero for all Gunners. In which other club could he get the same context, you know? Not many in Europe could offer him that, and the same wages as well. PSG would be one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They've got some money.
Loads of money.
Yeah.
Plenty of money. Yeah. Even more than you think.
Even more. Yeah. And I think they've got a lot.
No, but they've got more than that.
Oh, shit. That is a lot.
That's really serious stuff. Serious shit.
Okay. Because I can think of really big numbers.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, I do zero.
Plus one.
Yeah. Plus one.
Yeah.
But which clubs could actually afford him?
Yeah.
Very few. He's not going to go back to Barcelona, eh?
No, of course not. I don't think he's likely to go to Manchester City either with Pep there.
Why not?
Pep? Alexis? I don't know. I my impression was it didn't quite click for him under Pep at Barca as it has at Arsenal.
I think there were stories about him being not following Pep's sort of plan about where he had to play, wasn't it? I think that was the thing with him at Barca.
He had a great time in Serie A. Juventus were interested last summer by all accounts. Fenerbahce.
Yeah.
Oh, for goodness.
A rogue shout from the crowd. What, one Fenerbahce fan who snuck in. He's really upset. He's come to the wrong podcast. Because that Fenerbahce one is fucking funny as well, let me tell you.
Funnier.
Oh, man.
So you think he might go, like if Manchester City came calling, he'd go to, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I think Arsenal are going to do everything they can, but where some clubs will keep going financially and push themselves to perhaps places they don't want to go, we all would expect Arsenal to reach a point and then say no more. So I think it's going to be a question of whether it comes down to a financial decision or not. Yeah. And at what point the wrangling gets to a point where one of them says, yeah, okay, or no thanks. And I think that's an ongoing situation.
Right. Well, that's a cheery way to end the first part of the show. So I think we'll do that. Unless anybody has anything else they want to talk about in this part, James, anything?
No, nothing particularly. I think we've covered a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to do questions now, so if there is anything we haven't covered, by all means, let us know in the next part.
Yeah, so we're going to take 15 minutes. You guys get a drink at the bar, and we'll be back with part two right after this.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Where did Philippe go?
He went to the bar, actually, so I reckon we might be waiting 2 minutes still.
All right.
In the meantime, you can just sit here and stare at us.
Six Amigels, Philippe, please. Six Amigels. Each.
All right. Typical.
Oh, he's here.
Yeah. People want to see our legs.
Turned out a lot of people have paid their money to see our legs, and they were very upset.
Yes. So, look, yeah.
Yeah?
Legs. So, welcome back. This is part two, and normally in part two on the Arscast Extra, we take questions that people send to us on Twitter, but that would be really difficult to work. Checking our Twitter here. It would be quite rude as well, I think.
I think so.
Just checking.
It'd be worse than the table.
Yeah.
Just looking down at that.
So what we're going to do is James is going to roam around as best he can with the microphone.
What could go wrong, guys? I'm going to clamber among you. Should be fine.
Oh no, we'll go into the crowd rather than bring people on stage.
Definitely.
I think that's better. The stage is sacrosanct, you know.
That's it.
For the talent.
When do they arrive?
Yeah.
And us.
So will we get that part going?
Yeah, let's do it. I'll go down. I'll find out. If you do have a question, the most sensible thing is to raise your hand and I'll endeavor to find you. Here we go. Oh, what? And this is an easy one. So here we go. So if you tell us your name,
low-hanging fruit,
and your question.
That's exactly it. Yes.
There we go. It's a simple formula, but it's amazing how long it's taken me to come to grips with it. Okay, here we go.
My name's Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. Firstly, I just want to quickly say, and I don't want to get too sentimental here, but Andrew, thank you so much. I love what you do.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, you're a part of my daily life, and I think it's fantastic. And obviously, James and...
Yeah, fuck off, mate. Whatever.
listen.
Hey, before you ask a question...
Oh, he does it every day. Fuck off.
James.
Sick of it.
Before you ask a question, sir, may I, because this guy is far too shy, aren't you?
No, he's not.
That this podcast, the Arscast... is up for the FSF Awards.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to do like Obama. I said, don't clap, vote.
Thank you. Yeah, you can check it on the
FSF
website. So all votes greatly appreciated.
Cool.
Right.
Right. Question then. Let's have it.
I'll ask the question now. Okay, it's simple. Camp A, Camp B. Okay, so Camp A is this. Okay, here we are, November, the form's going. Very important player is out potentially for this season because we know Arsenal. Like Carzola's tendon could be completely snapped, we just don't know. Right? Are you Camp A, meaning it's dire, like it's probably going to end up being fourth place and knocked out in Champions League, you know? Or is it Camp B, which where I am, by the way, is that there's a resilience about the team and I really think that potentially we're going to win the title this year and we're going to pick up steam. And that Old Trafford result for me was huge. To hear Phil Jones say it felt like we lost 5-0 was awesome. And I really think that there's something building here. And when Cazorla comes back, let's please hope he does, we're going to catch fire again. And all right, we're going to go on to win. So Camp A, Camp B, from all five.
Okay, so cool. Camp B is the positive camp. And Camp A is like A for asshole camp. No, I don't know.
Camp B for brilliant.
Yes. I am a little more Camp B than I am Camp A. I mean, I still have concerns about some of the performances, but I think there have been a lot of encouraging signs this season. An 18-game unbeaten run, it's not an easy thing to do, even if you're drawing games that you would prefer to pick up points in. There's as much as winning is a habit, not losing can become a bit of a habit as well. So I think that's a very encouraging thing. I just have a little worry about injuries and maybe not having quite as much depth as we thought. And I think the midfield thing causes me some trouble, because until such time as we can really get that midfield functioning, I don't think we're going to play our best football. But I'm a lot more encouraged than I have been over the last number of years, that's for sure.
I'd say Camp B myself as well. Even though I'm a little bit torn between, it's probably Aeneas as well, between the person who's supposed to be neutral and fair and so forth, who would say, given the competition, given the fact that Chelsea look really, really good, I'm afraid, the fact that City will be very good, despite the fact that Liverpool still, you know. So I would be campaigned like that, but I still think it's possible. It's possible. Again, it's about managing the moments which are not so good, which is right now. And so far, you know, so not so bad.
I've tried to make a career of sitting on the fence, so this is tricky.
It's pretty uncomfortable, isn't it?
It is comfortable. I would veer slightly more towards Camp B, although I'm quite interested by your definitions, because in Camp A you said, which was going to be somewhat disastrous, finishing in the top four and getting knocked out of the Champions League. But, you know, you can still do quite well in other things, even if those things happen. I don't think that the two things are completely mutually exclusive. I think that, for me, what Arsenal need to do somewhere along the line to make sure that Camp B really has momentum is sort of, pardon my language, but win a fuck-off game, you know?
Yeah.
A bit, you know, if that Man United away game, Arsenal show up with a little bit more personality, a little bit more ambition, and come away with 3 points, and everybody sort of takes notice, and there's a trickle effect in terms of confidence and attitude that comes from something like that. I think somewhere in the next little period of time, Arsenal need although they managed it a bit at home against Chelsea, that was it, but something perhaps on the road with a similar stature, something that gives them that belief to go anywhere and take it to whoever, I think would make the difference.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, when is the last time you remember one of those fuck-off performances?
Man United FA Cup.
Yeah.
Man United FA Cup, yep.
Danny Welbeck.
Danny Welbeck.
That was a absolutely.
How do you see it, Stuart?
Absolutely so negative, you wouldn't believe it. No, B, definitely. Because yeah. I think we're better second half of the season anyway.
Yeah.
And Danny Welbeck will be back, he's told me himself. I think he tried to get himself on the bench yesterday, he was telling me the other day. But I'm always positive.
But
so.
You obviously see things at closer hand than we would. I mean, is the spirit within the group, is it positive? It feels like it's positive this season.
For me, I'm not saying it's the best team, but it's the best atmosphere amongst the squad since the 2003-04 group. You know, it's a real there's a great relationship between all the squad. I think they all get on very well. They fight for each other, but there's that extra step, isn't there, that they've got to actually, as you said, they've got to win one of those massive games. But I think I was there the other day the day after Hector signed his new contract, sitting in reception working, and as he was wandering around, all the players came and hugged him, said congratulations. So that doesn't happen anywhere else, and it happens at Arsenal.
Yeah.
So
cool.
I think it's a great atmosphere for me to work with these guys. You know, I've seen the crap times with players who are
don't fit within the squad. Mm. But this is a good squad.
Nasri.
Who? Eddie Barndor. So I'm positive.
Dumbledore.
As long as we finish above Spurs and we don't play on Thursday nights, I'll be very happy.
Yeah. Thursday nights in front of no people at Wembley. And the wonderful transport links from there to home. James, shall we have another one?
Yeah. By the way, if anyone gave a shit, us can't be. Right. Thanks, Andrew. Okay.
Sorry.
I think I've been relegated, haven't I, yeah? I'm in the crowd, no one cares. I've got a hand up over here. I'm coming
James, in. Can you get the beers in?
Yeah. Okay, I'm coming in. I had a poll, but I've lost it. Right, here we go. Hello, mate.
Cheers, mate. My name's Dan. I was wondering, we brushed on it briefly earlier on, but do you think it's ever going to be possible for a team in the Premier League to do the double, i.e. win the Premier League and potentially the Champions League? I don't think it's ever really going to be compatible again. You look at Leicester, no European football. Liverpool came within a Gerrard slip without having European football of winning the league. Chelsea done really well in the league with no European football. We're obviously very consistent in Europe. Can we do both? Can any team do both? But especially, obviously, us.
What do you reckon?
I think any team can. I'm not necessarily saying that Arsenal are in a position to do that at the minute. But there was a period where it was actually very common, where for a number of years in a row, the team that won the Champions League also won their domestic league. Bayern have done it a lot. Barcelona have done it a lot. Inter Milan did it. It was actually almost more common than not for a period to win both.
Porto.
Yeah, yep. But it's been a while since an English team has done it.
But, is the Premier League, I think maybe what Dan's trying to say, Premier League is perhaps a little bit more competitive these days, that there are, if you look at the table, five or six teams potentially that could win the title, whereas Bayern are going to win it in Germany. Spain has been a two-horse race for a long time. You know,
Germany,
they're not necessarily...
season.
But they're not as competitive leagues as the Premier League, perhaps.
I would beg to differ. I think it's changed. Now, there's something I would have said a couple of years ago. I think in Spain we are seeing at the moment actually five, six teams which are definitely very, very competitive. In Germany, it's a very strange season because you've got Offenheim there, you've got Leipzig there, you've got Dortmund is coming back, Bayern is not going too well. What's different is the sheer intensity, the constancy. Of every weekend, it's the intensity of it and the pressure, the psychological pressure that is put on the players and the clubs. To be honest, yes, I'm wondering when we're going to see a team that's going to be able to win both the league and the Champions League in the same year again. And for Arsenal, my gosh, there's still a long way to go for that.
Yeah. James, what do you think about this?
I could imagine. Oh, thank you, Andrew.
Where that's all right.
I think it's really difficult, actually. I think that if you look at it, you think about when Chelsea went on to win the Champions League, things like that, their league campaign was sort of dead by then, wasn't it? You know, yeah. And I think even Atleti, you know, they got to the final, but they sort of, by that point, were probably not quite in the league race. I think for Arsenal to get to the Champions League final, they probably would end up having to sacrifice something in the Premier League. So I think, you know, doing that as a double... I mean, we couldn't do it in 2004, could we? I mean, we had probably the best team in Europe. So.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the game that I've always wanted to forget and is imprinted in my memory, which is the return leg of the semi-final. The quarter-final against... Sorry, I'm going to weep. And Makelele shooting at goal and oh, no. They should have won it that year, but honestly, I mean... Don't you have the feeling, and I'm asking you, James.
You don't have to patronise me, guys. I'm all right. I like it. With my people, I'm fine.
No, but honestly, if you see, if you watch, for example, Atletico or Barcelona or Juve or Borussia Dortmund, do you genuinely think Arsenal is that kind of class at the moment?
No, I guess no. I don't have any conviction that they are. I think, like Amy says, I think you require some of those big fuck-off results to really give you that belief. And to be honest, I think Chelsea really did do that for a time. You know, the mood among the fans was so great at that point. But those last these last three games were a chance for us to get that kind of result. And having not done so, it, you know, has slightly shaken that faith. So now I don't, you know, we're talking about the draw here and there, but my realistic aspirations for the Champions League probably don't extend as far as winning it. I think it's a big ask.
I've got another question for James.
Go on.
Although winning both is obviously, you know, this big aspiration. In fact, it's a question for anyone really.
If you could
today be offered this season, you're going to win the Champions League or the Premier League. It's interesting to get that reaction because I think if you are...
Champions League, if only because that would piss Piers Morgan more. He would be so pissed off, that dick, that it would give me such great satisfaction. Take it, put it up your... whatever. Jaxi, I believe is the word, Piers. We've won the Champions League. With this manager, you think is... what does he think? I mean, he's like... I don't know.
I don't know how that cunt thinks at all.
I'm very proud. He's called me a smug clown on Twitter recently.
I would.
I called him a fascist.
Yeah.
Anyway, Champions League. I mean, to be honest, if you look, you have to think Arsenal. You've got to think Arsenal as well. For him... at this stage of his life and his career, to win the Champions League with Arsenal, I mean, who could be, you know...
Throw it out there. So who...
So shouts for Premier League?
Oh, well, we mixed that right up, James.
Wait, let's clarify. Let's clarify. You do it.
Champions League? Premier League? We're winning the Champions League! Come on! Shall we do another question?
Yeah, let's do another question.
Who would you most like to see relegated, Chelsea or Tottenham?
That's really tough.
Sorry.
Okay. Right, I've made it. You're going to have to lean into the mic for me a bit, mate. Here we go.
Hey, Simon here. I just wanted to ask if, hypothetically, everyone was fit and Welbeck was raring to go and Cazorla's doing keepy-ups for a week... Who would be your ideal starting 11, and who would be the people you bring on between the 64th and 77th minute?
Jack Wilshere. I can't.
Can't let it go. People. Difficult one for you, Stuart, obviously. I guess Czech, Bellerin. If everyone's fit, I'm going to give me some Mertesacker because I love the BFG. Sorry, I think, you know, clever player, doesn't have any pace to lose, even if he's getting a bit older. And I speak as the voice of experience there as a footballer. Koscielny, Monreal, Cazorla. This is where it gets a bit...
Andrew, that's still a better back four than the back four that got us to the Champions League final, remember? Aboui, Senderos.
Oh, yeah.
So, they got us to the Champions League final.
Yeah, should have played, probably.
Without conceding a goal.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
With Aboui in the team. Amazing.
Miracles do happen. Jesus, I don't know. Xhaka, just because he's new and I love him a bit. Ozil, with everyone fit. I kind of like Welbeck on the left. I like a bit of that. Alexis. And then maybe Alex Iwobi, I think.
That's 13 players.
13? That's how we're going to win it.
That's what Stuart Pearce did one day.
He did. He picked his first team with no goalkeeper.
That's right.
I think his wife said you haven't picked a goalkeeper, Stuart.
Great. It's such a difficult question, I think. Because there are so many combinations that might work. So, James, let's do another one.
Another question. Okay. Sorry. I've hurt someone else, but not myself. Hey, guys. I am going to come out the other side. Don't worry. Okay, here we go.
Hello, it's Chris here. It's the worst kept secret in the world that the contract for Wenger is waiting to be signed. A, do you think he should sign it? B, should he have the right to decide when he should go? And C, who should replace him?
Oh, blimey.
All the easy ones.
Thomas,
sorry.
It's unless there's like really somebody better out there, then why wouldn't he stay? I'm not necessarily convinced he will. I just got feeling. I just think maybe he won't. But it all boils down to if you can source somebody who's better at the job than he is. If you can't do that, then I don't really see any other option than for him to stay. As for if he decides when he should go, I think it's a position of almost unique power in football, really, because he's been at the club so long. He's just such a part of, not part of the furniture, that makes it sound wrong, but he's just so integral into the way the club operates and everything that it does. So any manager, I guess, has the right to decide if he wants to carry on a job or not. I mean, if you want to leave, you have that right as a manager to say you want
to leave. Yes, absolutely, to stay.
It's not what Piers Morgan says.
But it's, you know, Arsene has talked about having 600 people to look after, which is, I've never heard a manager.
That's me. Does it very well.
I'm sure he does. But there is one moment where you have, obviously, and he's coming to that stage where you've got to think about your succession, so you don't have, at Arsenal, what happened in clubs like Nottingham Forest, when Clough Ego went, at Manchester United, when Ferguson left, and so forth. When somebody was at Tottenham, when Nicholson left, and any club, or at Wolves, as well, when Stan Cullis left, every club where a manager has been placed for more than 10 years has come through this really difficult period of transition. And I think it's at the back of all our minds, and probably at the back of Arsene's mind as well, how are you going to manage that? There aren't an awful lot of obvious candidates. There might be one. He's a gooner. There might be one soon if
Bayern, by the way, it might not show
Bayern,
up on the podcast.
If Bayern
so
lose to
Bayern
Leverkusen,
sorry,
if Bayern
Philippe,
lose to
pointing.
Bayern Leverkusen, there might be some changes in Bavaria. I don't know. What on earth are you talking about, James? What on earth is that?
Don't worry, mate. Carry on.
Okay. Never fucking mind. So, if Ancelotti were available, which he might be not too long, which is quite extraordinary, the only one I can think of is Thomas Tuchel. That's the only one I can think of at the moment, who is a coach who would fit the ethos of the club and the style of play. Mm. But that's one, and I can't think of many others.
Amy?
I kind of think the question's slightly academic, because I think he's going to sign a new contract. I think it's something that the board want him to do, something that he wants to do. And unless things go spectacularly badly over the next few months, I find it difficult to see a situation where it's even much up for discussion. You know, the fans will have their view on whether or not that's the right thing to do, but I think within the club they feel very strong and very committed to what they're doing with the man they've got in charge until he decides he doesn't want to do it anymore. And looking at Arsene Wenger, for most of this season he's been in a better mood and he's looked younger. He really does look quite rejuvenated, and his humour is right back to its top level, and he just seems to be enjoying the job a heck of a lot more than he was in some of the recent years when the pressure is and the division in the fan base has become quite intense. And that to me suggests that I think he knows what he's going to do. So the debate about who follows him and when or when he retires, I think is for another day.
James, what are your thoughts?
I think he'll stay. Yeah, I think he'll sign a new contract. I wonder if it'll be 2 years this time rather than three. I mean, that's just my gut instinct. They might not be quite as long. And I think that when you ask to name a successor, it's difficult. The fact there's not an obvious candidate, Tuchel is a good shout, but beyond that, Owen Coyle getting a shout out. Sorry, can we have that guy removed?
Bruce Rioch.
Bruce Rioch.
Brendan?
Brendan, wow, rehabilitating up in Scotland. The fact there's not an obvious choice means that we should probably keep
keep Arsene in, and he's doing a good job at the moment. The fact that we're even having the conversation and that the tension in the room hasn't, you know, risen to people scrapping with each other suggests that it might be a bit more amenable to an extension.
Right. Than it's been. Okay. Well, that's that one.
That's that one.
All right. You're coming around the other side.
I'm going to move. Let's have some hands. Okay. Front row. Cool. Here we go.
Hi, this is a question for Stuart. My name's Alex. And what's the weirdest photo shoot you've had to do for Arsenal? Not necessarily the worst, just the weirdest.
The weirdest. Oh, I did one with, I think, 30 years of the community department, and they said to me, come up with something that goes, you know, sort of timely. So let's get Emmanuel Abouy in a great big Afro wig with a... And Nicholas Bentner with like a, you know, you might have seen the pictures. But other than that, I had 2 hours with Emmanuel Adebayor for the Arsenal magazine. I said, can you bring some couple of changes of clothes in? And he brought in his whole wardrobe. I spent 4 hours. So Adi, yeah, that looks great. Jesus Christ. Must have done 30 changes of clothes, hats. Stuart, how do I look? Yeah, you look great at it, yeah. Unbelievable. Pretty weird. Oh, no, and I went to Emmanuel Bowie's house.
That's a great start to any story.
Why is everybody laughing?
Which was...
Stop there, Stuart, it can't get any better.
Which is priceless. He turned... The door was wide open, and he turned up in a full sort of Indian headdress. And I said, "Are you right?" He said, "Yeah, yeah. I'm just on my computer." Don't. He said to me, "Don't look at this screen."
I'm just chatting to an intimate friend over the internet.
Hiawatha. And then we had the sort of afternoon. Running around the house with his kids, watching him eat from a massive, just a bowl, scooping it into his mouth. But lovely guy, though.
Right.
Lovely guy. Just a very, very stuck in the back of my mind. Don't look at the screen. It's like plans how to play as a fullback, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, a few weird ones over the years, and some good ones.
Great. That's Should we have another question? Come back a bit further. Here we go. This guy on the end, he's got a good seat. Right, here we go, mate.
Hello, my name's Ian. And my question is, out of every Arsenal goal that you've seen, whether live or on TV, which one would you have liked to have scored? So not necessarily your favourite goal, but which one would you like to have scored?
Mickey Thomas, 1989.
Exactly, Anfield. Well, That's an easy one.
I used to, like as a kid, after the 1979 FA Cup final, I would recreate the goals up and down the hallway in the house with a football, and I would like pretend to cross the ball and slide in like Alan Sunderland and drove my mother mad. Stop kicking the ball indoors! But I didn't. So yeah, that one, Alan Sunderland, 1979, I think would be
mine.
Amazing.
I think Liam Brady's cross, I think, for that. And then probably...
Graham Ricks.
Dennis's Newcastle, only because I got quite a decent picture of it, but available Arsenal picks, framed versions.
I have to say, Thierry at the Bernabeu, especially from the press box. It was fantastic because you know the journalists there, they jump up and down saying "Vamos Real" or whatever. And so we were all, you know, the English guys, so to speak, keeping very quiet. But when this one went in, we went absolutely bonkers. And we turned around and went... And it was magnificent.
So the universal theory. Language of the middle finger.
Universal.
What about Kanu's away at Spurs when he flicked the ball over... Took the ball over his head.
Luke Young?
Yeah. And it was about 5 minutes ago, and we changed around, so we kicked the other way. Remember, we didn't kick towards our fans in the second half, so I thought, get out the photographer's pit, run to the other end in front of our fans, get there before the end of the game. So Carney had just scored. I picked my camera bags up. I looked up and saw thousands of people going, "That fucking Arsenal photographer." Just got abuse. I walked around the side of the pitch all the way. You. All the way. It was worth it, though.
Yeah, absolutely. James.
Arshavin against Barcelona. That was special. Mm.
James, which goal out of all the Arsenal goals do you think would fit your footballing style the best?
Probably the one PSG gave us last night. No, I when I did play football of a fashion, I played at left back, and my brother, as I've mentioned on the show, is a Chelsea fan. So it would be remiss. Thank you, boost my brother. Always good to hear. It would be remiss of me not to mention Nigel Winterburn's goal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Although Silvinho didn't score a bad one either against Chelsea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one of those for me.
All right. Classic left back.
Yeah, I've got a good one. So Thierry's against Spurs when he ran the full length of the pitch. Our ground staff at Highbury used to sit behind the Tottenham bench. And as Thierry got the ball, one of the coaches said, "Keep on his left, keep on his left, he's shit on his left." And he smashed it in with his left. And our ground staff are patting him on the head. Terrible on his left, isn't it?
Brilliant. All right.
I missed that, it sounded good. Another question?
Yes, let's.
All right, here we go. Do you want to ask your question, mate? Go on then.
Yeah, my name's George. I'm 74 years of age. I've been an Arsenal supporter since I've been 10. And we're... And I'm a gunner. We're basically lacking leadership on the field. And we want a Vieira, someone like that. We want someone to say, "Come on, boys, fucking do it."
Thanks, George. I love that. I'm not sure that technically it was a question, but I mean, what do you think, guys? Do you think this is something that's been aimed at a lot of Arsenal sides? Are we lacking a leader?
Should never have sold Armory Bischoff.
I think we've got more this season than we've had for a while, as a matter of fact. Mm. I think Petr Cech is a genuine leader. I think Laurent Koscielny has grown into a leader as well. I think Alexis Sanchez, in his own funny, rabbity way, is a leader too. I think there are actually. You know this thing that Arsène used to say about, this whole thing about leaders, you know, I don't believe in that. We need to have 11 leaders on the pitch, which was bullshit, let's face it. Now we do have, I think, a few players who are genuine leaders, who have grown into it. And certainly the first two, I mean, Cech and Koscielny, for me, I would definitely put in that category.
I think the thing about people like Tony Adams and Patrick Vieira, the reason they stand out is because they're so rare. Those characters are, you know, if you could have a Tony Adams in your team tomorrow, of course you would, but you don't get them very often, you know? So that's a difficult thing, and it's difficult for some players to sort of assume that mantle. But I tend to agree with Philippe that there's a bit more about this team, and there's a bit more character, a bit more experience. And I think Arsene Wenger has said a number of times this season that there's more maturity, and I think that plays into it as well.
You know, it's the first time, I think, there's Hold on.
Guys,
there's a study center, whatever you would call it, called Observatoire du Football, which is based in Neuchâtel. They've recently done a study on the age of the starting 11s of teams throughout Europe. And for the first time, for I think 10 years, Arsenal is not in the top 50. Arsenal has actually got an old team, or much more experienced team, that used to be the case. It's a complete change. It's as old a team as the one which won the league in 2003-2004. So there is a big change. And also, I would ask, that's a question I would ask, talk about leaders. Name me a few in Europe at the moment, few players that you would definitely single out as true leaders of their team. And you'll think about it, it's not that easy to identify them.
Amy, any thoughts on that?
I need a few minutes.
All right, James, well then...
Or cheating, looking on Google.
Yeah. All right.
Is there another question?
Yes, let's.
Okay. This guy stood up. Here we go.
All right, my name's Rob. Wenger_portions on Twitter. I've got two questions. The
handy
one,
plug for your own Twitter account there, folks.
It's pretty much dormant anyway. Two questions, and I hate to bring it up now, but the way we've been playing, if the transfer window was to open, what position would you strengthen? Because I do believe that it's probably the deepest squad that we've had, but personally, I still think that we lack something out wide. And the second question, just to say, to sort of counter Monsieur Eclair's theory about November, do you think it directly correlates to how well James has been in November every single year since his birth? And should he start to self-harm?
There definitely is a direct correlation between how well Arsenal play and how injured James is. I think that's irrefutable at this point.
I can only apologise for being in good health.
And the first question, what would I buy if the transfer window striker? If I could get, like, the striker, that's where I'd spend the money.
I'd just buy Griezmann. But I have to stop going
around. It's going to cost you. No, I would agree, Griezmann. But, again, who is available?
Well, we're living in fantasy world here. We don't have to think about who's available.
I think there's a problem at the moment at right back, because there is no genuine cover for Bellerin. Mm. And then, sorry to say, for Carl Jenkinson, no. I mean, come on. No, okay, you know, I love the guy and so forth. Nice story. He did very well when he went to West Ham. He's not... It depends. I mean, if you want in a club which is going to have as an objective mid-table, you'll be fine. He's not quite up to the level, I'm afraid. So that would be another
But
position.
isn't that the big problem when you have a player as good as Bellerin who's going to be first choice, hopefully for years to come, is that you can't have another player who's even nearly as good sitting on the bench or not getting in the squad.
Well, there's one who is not getting in the squad at the moment. It's Mathieu Debuchy.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, you know, he was very close to being actually selected for the World Cup. He was for the World Cup, but for the Euro as well. Mm. And if he had been playing, he would have been selected. And at the moment, he's frozen out.
Yeah. Mahrez.
No.
Jamie Vardy, anyone?
That was the best piece of business of the summer, wasn't it?
Yeah. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks to Jamie and Edinson for doing their thing. James, where would you buy?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's difficult to argue with the Griezmann suggestion, isn't it?
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
But it is hard to imagine it coming off. I mean, everyone, if he was available...
Yeah,
everyone would want it, wouldn't they?
All right. Shall we do another?
I personally would go for Danny Welbeck. The sooner he comes back, the better.
Mm.
Higuain,
the one that got away, says the man on his way to the toilet. It's lovely, Danny. Okay, we've got time for more?
Yeah, we've got time for a few more.
Okay, cool. There aren't enough hands. Here's a hand. Here we go.
Hiya, I'm Dan as well. I think I'm the third Dan to ask a question. My question's around Aaron Ramsey. there was a moment yesterday where I think Ozil had it in our half near the touchline, and he turned out of his man, passed it to Ramsey, and Ramsey just looked around, passed it straight back. I think 30,000 people stood up and started berating him for it. Why does he get picked every single time he's fit? Why?
Obviously, Arsene Wenger thinks he's a really excellent player. That's why he gets picked. I think he is an excellent player as well. We discussed his... Thank you. we discussed his role in the team.
Mrs. Ramsey, by the way.
You know, I think something we spoke about maybe before the game, when you talk about him playing a pass backwards, is that maybe there wasn't anything on ahead of him. I think he's I think he's a pretty positive footballer. He looks like he always wants to make something happen. So I don't think it's his natural inclination to go backwards.
He's not one of these players who will give you the pass through the lines. That's not his style at all. What he will do, the runs will be through the lines, not the passes. He's not one of those. Ozil will do that, like the pass for Sanchez on the penalty. You will never see Ramsey do something like that. The problem is at the moment, he's an excellent player. He's shown it so many times, but he doesn't have a position in this team. And I can't think of one, to be honest, unless you have to unseat one of the regulars.
I agree with Philippe, and it's something when you think about that famous picture, which you probably took, of the young British core that all signed their new contracts at the same time, which was Jack, Jenkinson, Ramsey, Gibbs,
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I'd probably include Theo Walcott in that
grouping.
I'm talking about the sort of young British core, that there was a period where Arsene Wenger decided that building on that was what he wanted to do. And something seems to be a problem for quite a lot of those players, which is actually defining a position has been really hard for them. When you look at Oxlade-Chamberlain, there is clearly something there. There is clearly talent there. But where exactly is he supposed to play? And I think he's played in so many positions over the years. Theo Walcott, obviously, is he a striker? Is he a winger? It hasn't been that easy in many ways for him to nail down that position where he's supposed to play. And Aaron Ramsey, who we harken back to the Euros and how phenomenal he was for Wales, playing as a free number 10 with no obligation to do anything other than whatever he fancied. He's not got that luxury for Arsenal. And I just think it's something that's unfortunate, that it seems to be a problem that afflicts quite a lot of these guys, where nailing down a set position just hasn't really happened, and I don't think that's necessarily helped their development.
A short tactical point is when you use a 4-2-3-1, as Arsene has been doing for so long, it's actually a system which is far less flexible than you would think. And you do have to have this double pivot. The deep-lying playmaker, the guy who is doing the dirty work in front of the back four, the wide guys who are supposed to also be kind of... I can't remember when Nasri were telling me that, how Wenger described the post, but as being external playmakers or something like that. It is actually a far more rigid system than you think. And a player like Ramsey doesn't flourish in this type of rigid situation. And what I would be very interested to see is perhaps Arsene experimenting with different formations. You're looking at me, Stuart. You don't seem convinced that he's going to do it.
When did we last play 4-4-2? I can't.
4-4-1-1 is with Thierry and Dennis. Yeah. I think. Probably.
But I think that's what Arsenal did against Chelsea this year. When you looked at the team, there was a moment when I looked at the pitch and it just looked exactly like that. You could see the four at the back. You could see the four in midfield with the two wide guys, and then you could see Ozil tucked in just behind Sanchez. And it was, if you did it as a tactical drawing, that was it. It was the same formation that Arsenal used in the Invincible season. But it's rare.
James?
I agree with all the points, really. I think he hasn't... I think he doesn't really have a position. It's funny, like today, Steven Gerrard retired, and in some respects, Ramsey reminds me of Gerrard. Like, he's a player who's at his best when he's liberated. And, you know, you saw Gerrard shifted to the right for Liverpool or the left for England, but he was at his best in that number 10 role, almost free role, playing off a striker under Benitez. And I think Ramsey would thrive in similar circumstances, and I just don't think that's something that we can afford him at Arsenal. So it is a conundrum, but it's clear that Arsene Wenger is enamoured with him and does want to make it work. I think it's about finding the right partner.
$64,000 question there, or the £35 million question, perhaps. Who knows? All right, we've got time for a couple of quick ones to finish. A
couple of quick ones. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Peter. I come from the Supporter Club in Gothenburg.
Hey.
We're only recognized 2 weeks ago as an official Arsenal Supporter Club. So that's congratulations to Mark and the guys. And I know that Mr. Osblog knows us. He's invited to us to come to Gothenburg to have a
we'll definitely
full
do
night. No obligations. Just come.
Well, who could refuse?
Yeah. I only have one question, and I have it, and you touched it, but you have never... You
Sorry? Sorry.
But you never dealt with this. Who is our next manager? Who is our next manager? I mean, it could be Austin for 1-2 years, but who is our next manager? They're going to move our clubs forward into the future.
Why does Arsene Wenger run his contracts down? Because he's done that before. Thierry Henry left, David Dean at the same time. Why does Arsene Wenger not, if you expect your players to extend the contract, surely it's a manager, you should be at the forefront of that. Surely he should say, I have 5 years, I believe in the club. Yeah?
I've always got the feeling that the relationship between Wenger and the board is that they have trust in each other. And I don't think by not renewing before his contract expires is a massive deal for people at the club. I mean, I think
don't
the only time it was a massive...
Don't look at me.
I think it was a pretty big deal last time, but I don't think there's ever been a situation like the last time where it was so volatile. That was the one where it really felt like will he, won't he, and that it was very linked to the sense of where the club was going and whether the way he was running the club was going to be successful or had a chance of being successful. But I haven't got over that one. I think they're back to where they were before. I mean, it's been 20 years and he's always let it go down to the end.
Yeah.
Just going back to the Gothenburg Supporters Club representative question about who replaces Arsene, that just depends when he needs replacing. I mean... We can have that conversation now and assume that he might go in the summer. But if we're having the conversation assuming it might be in 2 or 3 years, totally different people might be available.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You look at the...
I mean, I'm watching Patrick Vieira's development with interest. I don't know how anyone else feels about that, but I think
and
he's
evolving like
into a genuinely interesting manager.
Thierry. Far more than Thierry. Because Thierry is, of course, now the assistant with the Belgian national team with Roberto Martinez. And obviously, I think he has an objective which is quite clear in his mind. Mm. Patrick has been a complete success and has also mapped out his career very, very carefully. I maintain that if you were to look at now, I maintain the only one I can think of is Thomas Tuchel. And again, if he becomes available, Carlo Ancelotti. The ideal transition man.
It's just a really difficult question to answer because you're...
Almost impossible.
You know, we can't predict the future because if we could, we wouldn't be sitting here because we'd be really rich from betting on horses. it's such a tough question. But, you look down the years at guys who were linked with the job, Guardiola, Klopp, people who would have been good candidates, and the timing obviously didn't work out because the job wasn't available.
What I would say perhaps, just this thing, is that after Arsene, because of the influence he's had on the club, what you might need is not necessarily a big name, but is something that the Italians call the ferryman. A manager, not the tinkerman, the ferryman, who takes you from one place to the other across the river in safety and ensures a period of calm and stability before you kick off again. Good grief, guys.
Come on. So, look, that's the almost impossible question. So we're going to have to wrap it up. So we'll do one more, James. And
One more. Here we go. Let's find one. Oh, here we go. Right here. Nice and convenient.
Hi, my name's Andy. And we all know how much of a fan of Robert Pires you are. Would you rather... Nice simple one. Would you rather have your own looks and the footballing ability of Robert Pires? Or, you know what's coming... Robert Pires' looks, but your footballing ability.
I already have my footballing ability, so... God, I mean, who wouldn't want to look like Robert Pires? Seriously.
Amy?
That's a fair point.
His new hairdo is really weird, though.
How dare you?
I've said nothing.
Robert Pires' footballing ability wouldn't... Yeah, forever. That would be... It's a very tempting one. But I think I would have... I think I'd have his footballing ability over him because he's quite unique and special and gorgeous. So... So that's that. That's that. Well, look, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all so much for coming out tonight. Really appreciate it. Before we go, I've one more thing. Amy and Stuart, as I'm sure you know, have a very beautiful book out at the moment. So if you're in the mind to get something for somebody for Christmas early, they've got some books here tonight that they'll quite happily sell and sign. So seek them out, and it's a really beautiful book, and congratulations to you guys for putting it together. Once more, thank you James. Good evening, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Thanks to our amazing guests. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.